Good afternoon, good morning, or good evening, and welcome to the American Age podcast. And this is my note for this week. My name is C. Travis Webb, editor of the American Age. And this week, as you know, I'm sure you heard Seth's gloss already, but we're talking about Kitty Couric's alteration of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's comments on Colin Kaepernick's protest movement. So, you know, I probably want to approach it from on two tracks. So, you know, on one hand, there is Katie Couric's very human sensitivity to how someone she admires and is probably in some senses an idol, as many people idolized RBG. There's a sensitivity to how Ginsburg's words are going to be taken, how they're going to be perceived, how other people are going to feel about it. And then there's the actual content of what Ruth Bader Ginsburg said. And I think these require two different takes. You know, the first, Couric editing Ginsburg's comments is really, you know, I don't really see it as a moral failure. I'm sure it could be interpreted that way. But for me, I see it more as an act of compassion. I mean, anytime you're interviewing anyone, you're essentially attempting to translate this person's views for the audience that you expect to receive the interview, whether it's, you know, on TV or in writing. In this case, it's, you know, Couric's book. So this is by necessity an act of translation. You are the translator. Now, even you might be attempting to uncover what the person's true feelings are, but even in that instance, you're attempting to translate what the person is saying into an idiom or to provide some kind of clarity so that this person could be understood. So there can be, you know, sort of an authentic moment, an authentic encounter with this person, which is probably what most of us crave as pro-social primates. You know, there's a desire to understand and to be understood. And for Couric, you know, there's a desire for Ginsburg to be understood that comes from a place of probably a type of love and admiration. And we want that love and admiration to shine through or to be visible or a parent or other people to feel the same thing that we feel. You know, we want to feel a sense of community or, you know, we want to reveal to other people or tutor other people about this thing that we have strong feelings about. And so from that point of view, this is not weird at all to me that Couric would alter Ginsburg's words. She's, you know, Ginsburg was, you know, 190 years old at that point. She's very, very old and is just not, you know, you start to lose, no matter how lucid you are at the end of your life, you're closer to death than you are to life. And the things that people who are deeply involved in the brouhahas of life, you're just not going to be that invested in. You're going to be less concerned about its reception because you're not going to have to care about their opinions for very much longer. But this is not Couric's position, right? So she, you know, is sensitive to how RBG is going to be received. She's sensitive to how RBG is going to be translated and understood to other people because she understands Ruth Bader Ginsburg's project as something that makes the current civil rights progressive effort possible. None of those things would have been possible with someone without someone like Ginsburg and the many people before her in a very long line, of course. So I don't find anything suspect or, you know, this is a very human thing to do. I mean, if you have, you know, an uncle or a grandparent that you love or a parent who isn't very careful with their tongue and you happen to be around them and some of your friends, it's very natural, like, well, this is not exactly what they mean, or to put a kind of gloss on it. It's just, this is a fully human moment that I feel like we should have some compassion and understanding for. It's folly. You know, it's the potential for error, the error in our misunderstanding of Ginsburg, the error of Ginsburg misunderstanding the moment, and then also Keurig's error in, you know, taking too many liberties. It's just a fully human thing to do. So no judgment at all. I don't really have a strong opinion about what she should or shouldn't have done in that, from the point of view of it being a very normal, pedestrian, everyday, like kind of low-level, compassionate effort to make sure that someone is understood. There's the second part of it, which is Ginsburg's content. And whether Kaepernick's protest, you know, where it fits in kind of an American tradition. You know, I have to say it's a slightly difficult one for me to get worked up about because, you know, kneeling during the national anthem, disrespecting the flag, spitting on the flag, using the flag to wipe your ass. These are things that I would not engage in, but I feel is the singularly unique and triumphant and just amazing thing about an imagined community like the United States. You get to do that, right? You get to do that and still call yourself an American. There's really no other that I'm aware of. I'm sure you can come up with some examples. I'm sure there are other countries, other nations that probably allow similar forms of protest. So let me hedge that a little bit. But in the history of the world, to have been a Christian and say, like, want to wipe your ass at the Bible or spit on the Bible or, you know, to be a Jew and denigrate the tabernacle or to be a Muslim and, you know, take a dump on the Quran or, you know, draw a funny cartoon of Muhammad. In the history of the world, these large-scale communities of strangers, imagined communities, these, you know, the things that allow us to relate to one another in, you know, in very large groups. This would have gotten you killed or certainly ostracized. One of the most amazing things about, I think, the United States is that it doesn't do that. Like, you are allowed to do that 1,000%. The symbol itself permits the denigration of the symbol. That's the whole damn point, as far as I'm concerned. So I don't really get all that worked up about, you know, Kaepernick kneeling or everyone kneeling or people standing or whatever. I get that other people do. And I relate to, I empathize with that. I get the, because, you know, this is not, would not be my form of protest, but I think this is what the flag as a cipher, as, you know, for what it stands for, what it points to beyond itself, the sign of what it is this kind of ultimate liberty. I think that's what you get to do with it. And so I don't have a strong feeling about that act. Ginsburg's point, however, that the system itself allowed for the system to be corrected on the system's own terms, I think is a fair critique of how most people have taken this. So people in this country, I don't know about other countries, but people have totally lost sight of the fact, maybe because of just our lack of historical education or our exceptionalism, totally lost track of the fact that slavery as an institution was the economic engine of the world for thousands of years. We wouldn't have come out of the Fertile Crescent. We wouldn't have come out of Egypt. We wouldn't have built great African empires, Eastern, Southeastern, European, Middle Eastern, North and South American empires. None of these would have existed if it was not for slave labor. All of them. No community is innocent. None. Nowhere on the globe is there an innocent community. When it comes to larger scales, I mean, not even really. I mean, as soon as you get to the level of, you know, larger than a tribe, slavery enters the picture. So black, white, brown, whatever. I don't care what the melanin content of your skin, your dialect, shape of your eyes, you know, how you roll your R's, doesn't matter. Slavery was there. It's been there, and it's not uniquely American. what is not uniquely American, but what is rare, is that America on its own terms allowed itself to transition away from this, away from slavery as an economic engine and away from slavery as a metaphysical concept that race meant anything at all. And so, I mean, this and the, we're still struggling with this, right? We're still trying to work through this as a nation. We're trying to figure out our way forward. How do we see one another without race being on the table? I think the progressive effort in this, as you know, if you listen to the podcast, I think the progressive effort in this direction is totally blinkered and off track, and it's the wrong direction, but that's not really what this, you know, this note is about. So, you know, RBG's point, I think, Ginsburg's point, is that the system's principles were used to overcome the system's shortcomings. This is something to hold up. This is something to be proud of if you are an American. Slavery is not something to be proud of course not. American apartheid is not something to be proud of. The continued racialized politics around policing is not something to be proud of. But what is that you can attack these things on the system's own terms, right? We can use Jefferson's words against slavery, even though Jefferson himself was a slaveholder. This effort to meet our rhetoric in practice is aspirational. And that's what I take Ginsburg's point to be. I welcome that point of view, honestly. I think it's something that is missing in popular public discourse on this topic. I'm not saying no one is talking about it, but it's clearly not the dominant view, and it should be. We can continue to make progress and improve our lot as a nation if we keep sight of the nation's principles. So that's how I feel about the Keurig and Ginsburg, or Keurig's interview of Ginsburg. As always, thanks very much for listening. And a reminder that we have our letter to the editor feature now. So if you have something that you want to quibble with or disagree with or agree with or whatever it is, you can absolutely write to us at editor@theamericanage.org. And we'll publish it on our Substack along with one of our responses. So thanks very much for your time.
Seth Rodney, the opinions editor and a senior critic at Hyperallergic. And this note this week is about Katie Couric editing the comments of Ruth Bader Ginsburg in an interview that occurred in 2016. Why this is worthy of talking about is that in her recently released book, Going There, Couric says that she's, or writes that she's conflicted after, during that interview, she edited out the parts where Ginsburg says some rather daft, I think is the right word, daft things in relation to Colin Kaepernick and the other athletes who were protesting racial injustice that year. In the book, she reportedly says that Ginsburg referred to the protest during the singing of the national anthem before football games as, quote, dumb and disrespectful, unquote. And I think that was included in the actual interview that aired, but what wasn't was that Ginsburg had also said that the protest showed, quote, contempt for a government that made it possible for their parents and grandparents to live a decent life, unquote. This I'm taking from the publication The Hill, which generally reports on politics and governmental politics, as in Capitol Hill. According to this article in Capitol Hill, on The Hill, rather, the RBG also said, which they probably could not have lived in the places they came from as they became older, they realized that this was youthful folly. And that's why education is important, unquote. I have a couple of reactions to this. One is, I'm actually less concerned about this sort of journalistic, it's not exactly malpractice, but it's malfeasance. No, that sounds like just as bad. I don't know what to call it. I do think that part of the problem with the way that journalism gets practiced in the U.S. is that we put a lot more faith in journalism than I think we may rationally be justified in doing so. I don't think that journalists should not be our culture's ethical watchkeepers. They shouldn't be, because they're just reporting things. I think if we had a class of public intellectuals like James Baldwin and Noam Chomsky, like we used to have, that we would have a group of people regularly analyzing the news. I think that reporters merely report the news, and I suppose that sounds pejorative, but reporters really just report. And Travis, I know my colleague on this podcast would argue that there is such a thing as objectivity and that reporters should look to practice that. I don't think there is any such thing as that. And I don't think that it's possible to be objective. I do think it's possible to be fair. And in that moment of editing out Ruth Bader Ginsburg's comments, which are frankly disappointing and slightly ridiculous, but also very, 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 very much informed by her generation, I think that she did a disservice to her publics. I think that Katie Couric did a disservice to her publics. I want to say the thing that most strikes me about this situation is that up into her last bout with cancer, lots of people on the progressive spectrum were, at least on Twitter, at least on my feeds, were loudly championing Ginsburg and were hoping for her recovery. And then when she died and President Trump was able to nominate yet another person, another conservative for the Supreme Court, and people started to question her decision to not retire during the Obama years. So there were sort of cracks starting to appear in the armor at that point. But RBG was very much championed by progressives and liberals. And I just think that this makes her seem not so shiny and laudable. And that's unfortunate. I don't take no pleasure in realizing that she has some very conservative and frankly fucked up views of athletes rightly protesting the state of endemic injustice in this country. I mean, to say that the protests were showing contempt for government, they're not showing contempt for government. They're showing contempt for all the areas of civic life where the government doesn't quite reach. Where, for example, NFL athletes being employed by a league where owners feel very empowered to say things like, we can't have the inmates running the prison, or some shit like that. I mean, if you are living in a system in which that kind of rhetoric is normalized, there's clearly a problem. And when the NFL coach, John Gruden, formerly of the LA Raiders, is outed as calling the NFL commissioner, Roger Goodell, a faggot because he's concerned about these clearly documented cases of CTE in professional football players, worrying about concussions and the effects that they'll have, long-term effects that they'll have on these players' lives. When Gruden calls Goodell a faggot for being that concerned, you have a problem. That's a kind of toxic masculinity. And when you have players responding to that kind of toxicity, and apparently Gruden said a bunch of other things that were quite racist, verbally attesting to his own homophobia and misogyny. I think that Gruden is not an outlier. I think that he's representative of a lot of the attitudes that persist in professional sports. And that Ruth Bader Ginsburg would say what she said about people who protest that kind of injustice, that kind of toxicity, that kind of real willingness to turn a blind eye to difficult and entrenched issues that plague us and that reduce the life chances of many of the people we call our neighbors. I think it's doing that is just, it just makes me think much less of her. It makes much less of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She's failed in some ways, but I think most people fail. I think part of what our culture does now too is we gleefully find those moments or those places in which someone has a blind spot, has an unwillingness to see someone else's pain or someone else's degradation and speak to it plainly. I think we like finding moments in our heroes' lives where we can take them down a peg. And it seems like this is a sort of perfect story, because you get to take down Kelly Couric, you get to take down Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And it bothers me that the Daily Mail, which is, I think, the British version of New York Post, and Fox News were gleefully reporting on this this week. I find that troubling. I find that disheartening. But here we are. RBG wasn't all we thought she was cracked up to be.
American Age Notes, Stephen G. Fullwood, Friday, October 14th, 2021. On Kelly Couric, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and unnecessary gatekeeping. First, a brief quote from the late, great Toni Morrison. Language can never pin down slavery, genocide, war, nor should it yearn for the arrogance to be able to do so. Its force its felicity is in its reach towards the ineffable, be it grand or slender, burrowing, blasting, or refusing to sanctify, whether it laughs out loud or is a cry without an alphabet, the choice word, the chosen silence. Unmolested language surges towards knowledge, not its destruction. But who does not know of literature banned because it is interrogative, discredited because it is critical, erased because alternate? And how many are outraged by the thought of a self-ravaged tongue? When Katie Couric decided to excise portions of an interview containing what would have been unpopular viewpoints by the late, great Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I wonder what she thought she was doing. What Couric said was that she lost sleep over the decision to do so, but felt it was necessary to protect the liberal justice and cultural icon. Protect her from what exactly? My take on this story is a fairly simple one. We never get better if we can't tell the story. And if we can't tell the story, it doesn't mean it will never be told. Eventually, the story will be told. For fun, I put myself in Couric's expansive neoliberal shoes and did the what if. What if Couric had published an interview with Ginsburg's unedited commentary? Of course it would have been news. I can imagine that the judge might have responded or backtracked a bit. Maybe. Couric might have had her network breathing down her back about the unwanted attention. The news cycle would have played with it like a cat torturing a mouse, but eventually leaving it somewhere to die. Social media would have gone mad for a moment, which is what social media does, goes mad. Kaepernick himself might have been asked to comment. Maybe he would have, but I can't imagine his response to Ginsburg's commentary being all that interesting. I say that because what Ginsburg said isn't all that interesting, and to protect her was ultimately unnecessary. The interview was published October 2016, and I don't have a memory of it. Do you? It doesn't surprise me in the least that Ginsburg called those football players stupid and arrogant. The idea that Ginsburg thought their actions showed, quote, contempt for a government that has made it possible for their parents and grandparents to live a decent life, it made me laugh. How? The U.S. government has rarely done anything without being pushed to do so when it comes to the well-being of its non-white citizens. The civil rights movement is a great example of that. Then Ginsburg is quoted as saying, which they probably couldn't have lived in the place, could not have done and lived in the places where they came from. As they became older, they realized that this was youthful folly. Couric quoted Ginsburg as saying, and that's why education is important. It sounds like a terrible ad. America, come here and be free because you can't be free where you are. Or America, free when and where we say you can be. Did Ginsburg think that Kaepernick was a child of immigrants? Anyway, protecting racism isn't useful folly. Excuse me, protesting racism isn't useful folly, Ginsburg. It's one of the prime ways in which you bring attention to an issue that has largely gone unnoticed or deliberately ignored. That's the nicest way I can put it. Again, though, what Ginsburg said isn't all that interesting. Given her status as a judge, it's not hard to imagine what she might have thought about such matters. You know, the extrajudicial killings of black people. These things should be adjudicated in the court system. Got it. Well, that's hardly comforting given the treatment of black people since they arrived on this continent when it became legal to enslave an African person. Tell the truth, shame the Ginsburg. I'm not calling Ginsburg a devil, just noting that what she said about the football players, about their choice to kneel during a national anthem at football games, also applies to her commentary. Dumb and disrespectful.